The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
Ancient aliens killed Martin Luther King Jr.
Yes, that seems legit.
Since the dawn of 2009, one TV show has dared to ask the most important questions about the origins of our world. That show is Ancient Aliens.
Yet until now, no one has asked the biggest question of all. Is Ancient Aliens total bullshit?
And that's what our show's about. Finding the truth under the nonsense of one of television's most popular franchises.
This is...
How many times do I have to tell you it's more like Ancient Aliens?
This is More Like Ancient Aliens, a podcast about the hit pseudo-history channel show, Ancient Aliens. I'm Toby Ball, the creator and host of the UFO podcast Strange Arrivals.
And I'm Brandon R. Reynolds, a journalist who's made of the most important metamaterials of all, love and pluck.
Love and pluck. And we are very happy to have on the show today, host of the Paranoid Planet podcast, Michelle Gagné. Michelle, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so we're about to talk about probably the least ancient of all the Ancient Alien episodes we've done. There's almost nothing that predates 1947 in this entire episode. So anyway,
that's fine with me because I'm a modern historian. So I had to study Rome and everything after I graduated from university.
Oh, there you go. Well, and I've only been alive since 67. So I've covered most of the time that we're going to be talking about.
Yeah. You got a few years up on me.
All right, today we're looking at Season 15, Episode 2, The Relics of Roswell. It originally aired February 2nd, 2020, when we could have known what was about to happen. It was happening in China. February 2nd was a palindrome day, 0202-2020. It was Groundhog Day. It was also the Chiefs beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl, and Novak Djokovic won the Australian Open. And sort of more ominously, the first COVID death outside of China happened in the Philippines. So, big day. Why are we covering this particular episode? Well, it's fucking Roswell. It's even less ancient than the Skinwalker Ranch episode. There's very little ancient about this, but here we are. The thesis is there's just a ton of alien shit lying around in New Mexico desert, and it's actually not that interesting or inspiring. Without further ado, why don't we get started with this thing? The very first thing that you hear in the kind of introduction part is it starts with saying,
a fiery object crashes into the earth and ignites the modern UFO era.
Which right off the bat, like, Michelle, maybe you've run across this. I have not. I don't think there are any eyewitnesses to an actual spacecraft flying through the sky, and certainly not be it crashing into the ground.
I looked at a lot of this in the summer, and there was a guy called Dan Wilmot and his wife who apparently had told the media in 1947 that they saw a flaming ball in the sky on the weekend of the 4th of July weekend. I think it was July 2nd. But I guess this is a spoiler alert. Mac Brazel, who discovered the so-called wreckage, actually said it was lying in his ranch since June 14th. So whatever people saw that weekend, it was not what Mac Brazel found on his ranch. It was something completely different. So there may have been a fireball or a shooting star. So one person that I know claimed that they saw something in the sky that when people claimed that the thing crashed.
Well, you know what else sometimes is lights up the sky in sort of a fire-like manner on July 4th weekend?
Alien ships.
Well, fireworks in the United States. Yeah. So anyway, it's just a theory off the top of my head. Brandon, you seem skeptical about all of this.
I don't know. I mean, they're talking about multiple ones. Also, you can really trace the fortunes of the Ancient Aliens series. They've depicted the crash in Roswell a number of different times. And as their series has gone on and as their budget has increased, the quality of the crash, the depicted crash, has certainly improved. And, you know, used to be in the early seasons, it really looked like, you know, very like a Sims version of like a thing kind of doinks down, looks like a tin can, sort of pops. And this one had real razzle-dazzle. It skips. I mean, the skipping is an important part of this thing that they explore, but it really was... The production values, very high, very impressive, very convincing, I thought, top to bottom.
I was fascinated by some of the CGI there because, so the thing skips on the ground and goes flying another 2.5 miles, but then you see it in another of their depictions where it just shatters like an egg in a million bits. And I'm thinking, why is this thing so resistant that it can skip for 2 miles and then it shatters? You'd think that it would have broken on the first impact, but... That's just me. Maybe I haven't studied physics in a long time.
Well, it's
I did like the one that goes to pieces so neatly. Like there's nothing inside it. It just sort of like crumples. It looks like an Easter egg or something, you know, like you crack it on somebody's head.
Like a Christmas ornament that just shatters on the floor.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It looks like a Christmas ornament. It's like, oh, wasn't any chocolate inside this at all. Oh, well, sad.
So this whole episode is kind of a Giorgio Tsoukalos, Linda Moulton Howe buddy movie. Mm-hmm. They kind of go on a field trip. And we start off, I can't even remember what city. It doesn't really matter.
The city is Los Angeles, California, Toby, where I currently live.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Hey, have you found that pyramid in Los Angeles?
No, but I did check out the building that they went to because it was driving me nuts. You know, where they meet. They meet at the beginning and then they go inside and there's this vault. And I was like, where is that place? Yeah.
The ultra secret vault.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's on Wilshire Boulevard. It is 12121 Wilshire Boulevard, the Wilshire Bundy Plaza. It is a 14-story office gym nestled at the bustling intersection of Wilshire Boulevard and Bundy Drive in Brentwood. And if you're interested in renting some space there, revel in breathtaking panoramic views of the ocean, city, and mountains, creating an inspiring backdrop for your business or alien conspiracy. There is a Vienna pastry shop located on the ground level. EV charging and the thing I was looking for, on-site storage for your alien wreckage.
Are we getting paid for this?
I'm wondering who's sponsoring the show.
It's like the product placement is quite on.
I'm reading from the thing. I can't vouch for the quality of
it. We're nailing it. All right.
Anyway.
I thought it was interesting that they say it's a secure remote facility, but they're in there with cameras. And I'm thinking, if I was hiding stuff down there in a safety deposit box, I don't want Linda Moulton Howe going and showing people exactly how to get in and out.
It's also not remote. It's in the middle of Brentwood. I mean, it is West LA. You cannot get less remote, as the advert has told us, you know.
It's remote from New Mexico.
That's true. Yeah. It was a long trip for Linda.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
So anyway, they go, there's a big ass door that they go through, and then they go, and it's basically safe deposit boxes, need two keys to open. She pulls out one thing, and inside it is another thing, and then she opens that, and then there's a little bag, and she opens that, and then they put on cotton gloves. First of all, they put on cotton gloves in this thing, and then they go to the desert later, and then they're just handing this thing back and forth with their greasy, grimy hands, so it's all just for show. There's one thing that looks kind of like a lozenge, I would say.
Yeah.
And then another thing that just looks like a piece of rock. Mm-hmm. But it is far from just a piece of rock. It has many, many layers, some of which can be measured in microns, apparently.
Mm-hmm. He says that they're made out of pure bismuth. And I think that's the active ingredient in Pepto-Bismol.
Oh.
And also magnesium zinc, she says. And I found out that's the main ingredient in a lot of vitamin supplements. So Ooh. It's not like this is space age technology. It's stuff that we eat every day or we have in our bathroom pharmacy.
Yeah.
So, right. Or apparently aliens do too. Aliens can also have indigestion.
Exactly. Out of this. That could be our second sponsor for today. It'd be Tums or Rolaids. Yeah.
We're racking them up.
We got a lot going on. There's a lot of opportunities out there, folks.
Sign up now.
Send us some money.
This is a good example, though, of an episode in which, you know, usually it's like stuff from the past. And so they can say, well, you know, you have to wonder X, Y, and Z. And then they throw out these theories. But in this case, you have the material. There are ways to test it. They offer their story. And we'll get into this as the episode goes on, where you see the disconnect between what they're saying is going on and how they're saying they arrive at these conclusions. And then the total inability to like actually follow it up. Like, you know, they're like, Linda Moulton Howe says, I talked to these experts, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, the show doesn't feature them. Like, this is your opportunity to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this thing you have in a vault is somehow special. The show never does it. It just says it's made of these various common elements that, frankly, occur all over the place. And usually they can get out of that corner they painted themselves into by saying, you know, someday the aliens will return and they'll prove to us our hybrid alien origins or whatever. They can sort of cast the line out. But in this case, it's like you had the thing right now. You could have solved whatever it is that you're looking for or disproven it. But they sort of coast over our apparent awe at the use of the word molybdenum over and over again and how that's common yeah. in, whatever.
It's an impressive word.
Yeah, it is.
Did you notice that Giorgio gets all excited when she says this is like 99% pure yeah. aluminum?
99.5% pure aluminum.
As far as I know, we can't produce 99.5%. I mean, this is incredibly pure.
And I looked it up. It's bullshit. They make it all the time. I mean, the pure aluminum can be found all over the place.
The industry standard is like between 99.5 and 99.8. So yeah, it's like on the lower end of the industry standard. Anyway, just another thing that they don't know about. We do get a little provenance talk, which is not something we get a whole lot. Apparently, these things, Linda got them from Art Bell, mm-hmm. The famous Coast to Coast guy. And he got them in the mail from a guy who says that his grandfather got them in Roswell at the time of the crash. To me, this all sounds like a Richard Doty style disinformation thing where they're just like, oh, you know what we could do? We could send Art Bell some shit. We could send him a couple rocks, tell him we found him at Roswell, maybe suggest he pass them on to Linda Moulton Howe and, you know, Bob's your uncle.
I think he was sitting on those for a while too. It sounds like they have a name for them. They're called Bell's Bits or was it Art's Parts? I forget. There was like a weird little term for it that I thought was just not particularly appropriate.
It's Shades of the Osiris Shaft, unfortunately. Quick recap about the changing Roswell story where, you know, initially it was reported in the newspaper that a flying disc had crashed. Very quickly, they retract it. They do a press release saying it was a weather balloon. And then we get, I can't remember who it was now, maybe it was Richard Dolan, says like, why would they, you know, it got sent to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Why would they do that with a weather balloon? And, you know, the reality is that I think it's been pretty well established that the balloon was actually part of Project Mogul. What they did is they sent these microphones on these high altitude balloons, and it was a way of monitoring to see whether the USSR was testing nuclear weapons. And so when this thing crashed, like they wanted to retrieve the stuff and send it back because it was a highly secret, sensitive operation at the time. And that was the reason why it was a big deal, not that, you know, the ground was strewn with alien bodies.
Yeah, we can also point out that they keep showing these large, neoprene balloons, but the big balloons that they use for the Skyhook. And the Mogul balloons were actually arrays of smaller neoprene balloons. And the problem was that they disintegrated in the sun all the time. And that's one of the reasons why Mac Brazel found one, some remains on his ranch, because they just weren't that reliable. And then eventually they would have these big balloons that look more like what we call a weather balloon. So whatever Mac Brazel found was not a weather balloon, but a lot of the materials he found were often found with weather balloons. They're called ray wind targets. And they're those box kites, like silvery. It's basically just aluminum foil on top of paper with balsa wood, and there was pink tape there with designs that made one person think that it was alien language. Yeah. But it turns out it was all made by a toy factory in New York so that they could keep track of these balloons flying towards Russia. But of course, no one at the time knew, even the people in Roswell. They just figured maybe this is a top secret program. So they said, we're just better off saying it's a weather balloon.
So they did scramble the military. Like, what's real is that there were some stories in the news and one said UFO, and then it backtracked and then it said weather balloon, right? And that there was an army presence that went out there and collected some crap from the desert, right?
There were two guys. There was Jesse Marcel. And then there was another guy that nobody ever mentions. His name is Captain Sheridan Cavett. And he was there picking up debris, and he never believed they found anything out of this world. But they never quote Cavett. They only quote Marcel, because 30 years later, Marcel said he found this indestructible foil-like material. He describes essentially what he was photographed with, but somehow his memories of it has changed, that he thought it was now super resistant, that they couldn't destroy it. And I'm wondering, if you're a low-ranking intelligence officer, why would you destroy evidence that you don't know if it's like a Soviet machinery and you're picking up these pieces? You wouldn't be experimenting on destroying it. You would just wrap it up and take it to Roswell. So right. It seems that Jesse Marcel, when he was talking to, is it Sten Friedman in the late 70s, started having these memories that were not particularly accurate. And Cavett has been interviewed by the Air Force during the 90s. And there's also some documents that came out of their archives or files. And it turns out he said, no, it was just trash that looked like it came from a weather balloon. They thought so, though they weren't quite accurate in that.
So it was actually more important than what they thought because it was connected to surveilling the Soviets.
Well, they didn't know in Roswell.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
The Roswell base was, they had a nuclear bomb team. That was the only place that the bomber group was located. It's about 100 miles south. I drove through this, but it was a long time ago. In Alamogordo, there was another Air Force base. And that's where the Project Mogul balloons were being sent out. So the CIA was involved. A team of professors from the University of New York was involved, and the Air Force. But it was a pretty top secret program, so people in Roswell wouldn't have known what it is.
Space microphones is not as exciting as UFOs, unfortunately.
No.
No.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
So we get into this, the whole thing with the press conference and, you know, Jesse Marcel. This guy, Stephen Bassett, who I don't think we've run into before, makes this kind of like, these guys are such assholes that they said, get whatever tinfoil that you have on a piece of fish in your fridge and put that in front of the cameras. I don't know whether he means that literally or whether he's saying that's the kind of ridiculousness. But anyway, it's stupid.
It sounds like people are having a good time, though. Just like, fuck it. Fuck the media.
Yeah.
Throw them some stuff. It'll be great. We'll have a good time.
That's right.
Everybody just smoking cigarettes, you know, just puffing away, drinking their whiskey. A
couple martinis.
The '40s were great.
We get Richard Dolan and Nick Pope. This is so stupid, but they talk about, so there's this pretty famous photo of Jesse Marcel, like sort of showing the stuff. And then this guy, Ramey, who's got a piece of paper in his hand, and apparently they tried to digitally enhance it. And then the classic sort of, and this is a quote, some researchers, end quote, thinks they can read enough to say that on that piece of paper, that it confirms that there's a crash and also that there was a cover-up.
As far as Roswell researchers are concerned, the memo points to a cover-up with a downed UFO and its extraterrestrial crew being shipped from the base and locked away from the public eye.
When Ancient Aliens resorts to using weasel words such as some researchers, like you get the feeling that it's like they found some guy on Reddit who might have posted something about it and like ran with it. But did you run across any of this stuff, Michelle, about the digitally enhanced?
That's a new one. It looks like maybe they're looking for some new smoking gun, because it used to be they would try some other things. A lot of them got debunked. But it's kind of far-fetched to think that not just that you can somehow photographically enhance. I think, what is it that Nick Pope says?
Modern forensic document analysis and photographic enhancement.
And he calls it the new smoking gun or something like that. Now, I kind of like Nick Pope. He was on my show. He's a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to dislike him. But at the same time, he's a bit of a grifter. He's like, he's in the business of selling Nick Pope. And I even called him out on saying, why are you on Ancient Aliens? Like, if you believe that there are real flying saucers, there's got to be something more respectable. And his answer was, well, I only do the nuts and bolts episodes. I don't deal with, like, did the aliens build the pyramids or something like that. But even then, I mean, it's clear that he's been able to milk this, like, 3 years that he worked at the, you know, the saucer desk or whatever it was, yeah, in the British Air Force. And he's built a whole career out of that. Most people who have that job move on to do other things, right? They don't go and make a whole career out of discussing these issues. I thought it was kind of silly to think that someone like, is it Brigadier General Ramey? I forget his rank.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That Ramey's parading this extra secret memo while he's there knowing there's reporters and pictures being taken, and presumably even Jesse Marcel was on a need-to-know basis, so he probably wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't want him to see this secret memo, yeah, either. It just seems silly. I mean, it's really bad. It's bad handling of evidence.
Yeah. I like the idea that somewhere it says it, like at the bottom, it says, don't forget about the cover-up. Make sure you, yeah, take care of covering this stuff up.
Yeah.
It's written in Pig Latin, I believe. It says, ex-nay on the over-up K.
I feel like the motif of looking at what a government figure has written on a piece of paper has really come back into vogue with all the stuff that Trump has. You know, he's always like carrying something, and then they'll be like, look, we got a picture of him with his notes, and it's, you know,
oh yeah,
picture, yep, of a guy with his dick in his hand or whatever he's doing, you know, who knows.
It's like when they got that picture of the elder George Bush during a debate, and on one of his cards it said, message, I care. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Classic moment.
He was a pretty stoic guy. Maybe he needs to be reminded to have, yeah, emotions sometimes.
Yeah. Lighten up. Lighten up, George.
The most excited I ever saw George Bush Sr. was when he refused to eat his broccoli. I don't know if you remember that one, where he had all the broccoli farmers come to D.C. to protest the fact that there was no broccoli being served in the White House.
Yeah, he just didn't like broccoli. It's one of the few vegetables I like. Just another thing that George Bush and I don't have in common.
That is why you're such a liberal.
Linda Moulton Howe then states without evidence that there were a number of UFO crashes that we know about between 47 and 49. Aztec, New Mexico, I think there was supposedly a crash. But they kind of like move on. But this might be my favorite sequence of the entire episode, which is Linda Moulton Howe says the mix of elements in her layered sample has baffled metal experts. And they immediately cut to George Knapp,
yeah,
who is not a metals expert. And he says, they're alien.
Yeah.
So it's just like, what the hell is going on here?
That's a perfect example. It's like, all right, Linda, if some dude said that, give us his name or her name, whoever your exotic metals expert is, and we'll get him on the show to say, now, listen, I've been in this field for 40 years and I've seen some crazy stuff, but I've never seen layers this thin and delicious as these thin and delicious layers of metamaterials. That's what I'm talking about. Like, you could prove your point But she's like this, and then they cut over to this dude, and they're like, George Knapp.
Local television journalist and another UFO grifter.
Yeah. I mean, from one grifter, former TV news journalist to another.
So Linda Moulton Howe gave some of the stuff that she got to the military, apparently, which already has crashed vehicles that can compare it to, of course. And it was at this point that I really became fascinated with Georgios Tsoukalos's insane necklace that he was wearing throughout this entire episode. I think he took it on the road trip and just kept it on. It's a lot of stuff going on.
It's a very virile necklace.
It was. Yes. It was. Yes.
I would be afraid of being in an intimate moment with that man with all the power that this thing represents.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had the necklace, and then he was also carrying around his bag. He had his bag with him all the time in this one, regardless of whether he could possibly use any implements or not. And it's at this point, Brandon, where I think maybe we should hear a little bit more about Michelle's work in the field of weird stuff.
Yeah. Michelle, you have a podcast. It's not like ours in the sense that it doesn't obsess on one TV show, but you do have an expansive palette of crazy shit you're looking at, and it's called Paranoid Planets. What is your intentions toward UFO lore and conspiracy lore? How did you get so fascinated by it, and why are you trying to bring it all down?
I was a huge space nut as a kid. I mean, Star Wars came out, and I couldn't get enough of anything like it. Battlestar Galactica was on. I remember Space 1999 was a big deal. I don't know how big the George and what's her name, the Andersons shows were in the States, but there were British like puppet shows, a lot of like space stuff. You remember the movie or TV show UFO?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and a lot of that was turned into like puppet Saturday morning programs. You know, so there was so much space stuff. Oh, yeah, there was this really cheap, one of James Cameron's first big films was Battle Beyond the Stars, which was like a Star Wars knockoff. And it starred like George Peppard and a couple other semi-famous people. So I remember like going to see these things in the cinema and just being riveted and obsessing with it. Maybe up until almost the beginning of high school, I was really into UFOs and things like that. I think it was really in the air in the early 80s. And then, I don't know, I got interested in girls and other things. And I got back into conspiracy type things in university when I discovered the Kennedy assassination, when Oliver Stone came out with that film JFK. And maybe not immediately, but eventually I kind of really fell for the whole, you know, the CIA did it and whatever. So it took a while before I started kind of losing the paranoid impressions. I think it was after the 9/11 attacks, where I was convinced the men who killed Kennedy had, you know, perpetrated the 9/11 attacks. And one day my brother came in and says, oh, no, it wasn't a missile. It was a 757. Like, that's not true. And he sends me a website or something like that. And sure enough, it looked like a good argument. They'd found bodies. They'd found a piece of an engine inside the Pentagon. So I think that was the first time when I realized, oh, I could be wrong about all this stuff. And then I started deconstructing it. I was a high school teacher at the time. And then I got into college. I started teaching. I'm a historian, but I started teaching in a humanities department. And one of the things we have to do is teach critical thinking. So one of my colleagues started a class called Knowledge and Conspiracy Theories. And like, oh, I want to teach that too. And I found myself getting really excited whenever I covered the Kennedy assassination. I think I felt that most conspiracy theories are probably wrong, but I felt that the Kennedy assassination was that one theory that had to be right. So I started researching it again in a different light. I thought, I'm going to write a book about my journey. And eventually it kind of blew away every single conspiracy until I was left with the conviction that it was one man with one gun. So I make a lot of people angry with that. I've published a book called Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination. Not my title. My title was Autopsy of a Modern Myth, which I thought was cooler, but Routledge decided it wasn't specific enough. So that's the book, and it's been pretty successful. I've had, you know, professors teaching from it, and I get a little bit of money each year that kind of supplements the budget. And then while I was working on that, one of my friends who's in the film industry, he and I got together, and I said, look, I'd like to start a podcast, but I suck at anything technology. And he knew a lot of stuff about online work, editing. His wife had been a recording artist, so he's the guy who said, look, I'll do the hardware work, and then I can do the content. And over time, I ended up doing more and more of it because he got busy with other things. But that's that. So for the last, four or five years, I've had this podcast, and we look at deep state, UFOs, Kennedy, and a bunch of other stuff. I looked at cults. You know, I come from a religious background, but I have identified some cultish behavior in my own community. And I've talked to a lot of cult survivors. Like, you may have heard of Sarah Edmondson. She was pretty high up in NXIVM. And she's Canadian and she studied Montreal. So I reached out to her. She was on my podcast. Every now and then I go to the conference for the International Cultic Studies Association and get to meet more people. So eventually this podcast might be conspiracies and cults because it seems to be a theme that I go back to a lot.
Yeah. Well, some of the other guests we've had, there's a similar trajectory a lot of times, which is people are interested in UFOs or whatever, paranormal, all of that. And they believe it very strongly, and often the ones who believe it the most strongly, like you definitely have, there's some sort of cognitive or behavioral or whatever decision you can make, and whether you make it consciously or not is hard to say, but you know, you could, if you can figure that out, it would help us go a long way to sorting out a lot of the problems we have today. But you know, some people go deeper, and if they hear something that obviously counteracts their beliefs, they dig their heels in, and then others are like, well, like what you're talking about, this idea that I could be wrong. There's a reality that's external to me and to my belief system, you know. So basically it comes down to like that path is something like science on one side and faith on the other. And it's like, well, nothing's going to shake my faith in this thing. So I must believe in it more strongly and believe it even more strongly the more I'm pushed on it, because then my faith is being challenged and I need to show this and then like come up with all these crazy justifications for it. So it's always fascinating to sort of see people who challenge that stuff very directly and then go, well, I've ruled out everything else. Therefore, it can't be what I thought.
And I think a lot of people don't stop to realize that a lot of times when we're willing to believe in conspiracies, we're often in a vulnerable part in our life. A lot of people go through a crisis. I only realized later that I started getting obsessed with the Kennedy assassination after a friend of mine died in a car crash. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of threw me for a spin. You know, I was thinking dark thoughts, and I think the JFK crowd was there to say, hey, guess what? You know, the dark thoughts do lead somewhere. But it turns out to be kind of ersatz truth. You know, it's you think that it's real history until you realize that it's just a bunch of broken glass that people have taped together. So for me, I guess as an historian, I was used to studying facts. But once I started teaching in the humanities department, I was forced to teach and study critical thinking. And I started reading books on argumentation, deductive logic, things like that. And it helped me just be clear about my own beliefs. It helped me a lot. So I tell my students, I know it's boring to look at, you know, Venn diagrams. But after that, you're going to find that it's really benefits to see whether things really are logically consistent in an argument.
Well, and I'm curious too, you know, you've been working on this podcast the last 4 years and sounds like interested in it before that. And a lot of these things had been simmering on the back burner. We talked to Sabina Maiolko, and, you know, who came on the show, who is an esteemed scholar in her own right and studies, you know, folklore and that kind of thing. And so she was appearing on Ancient Aliens in the early days when it was kind of just a lark. And she said, I saw as these beliefs became more central to the functioning of American society and government, then it started to freak me out. And so I said, I'm not going to participate in this anymore. It's not just this like frivolous entertainment on TV. It's more insidious than that. So I'm curious, Michelle, as you've been working on your show, have you seen, you know, that same kind of effect, like just how conspiracy mindedness and I mean, hell, even UFO stuff being part of congressional subcommittee hearings. It's like, this is back in the news, and it's, you know, it's informing these beliefs that are adjacent to other things like vaccine resistance and all kinds of other stuff.
QAnon.
I'm curious. Yeah. Like, it's not just like, oh, UFOs are this fun, silly thing, but it's like, no, you can draw a direct line to stuff that is way more central to the functioning of our society at this point, or dysfunction as the case may be.
Yeah, there's a guy called David Clark. I think Toby spoke to him. Yep, I keep trying to get him on my show, but he keeps saying he's too busy. Great book, because it's called How UFOs Conquered the World. And, you know, he's a folklorist. He's interested in how, you know, UFOs fill a kind of a spiritual need. And even for people who are, quote unquote, nuts and bolts, like Nick Pope, there's definitely, it fills a void, like an existential void, to explain why are we here? What's the purpose of life? And while some conspiracy theories can be quite dark, you know, the assassinations, coup d'etats, it makes you think that everyone's out to get you. I think the attraction with UFOs is that it has this, know, that kind of this new agey, there's a hope out there. They're going to come and save us from nuclear technology, these kinds of things. So there's a messianic element to the UFO conspiracy theories that I don't think you find elsewhere. The JFK people are pretty dark. They're in a dark place a lot of times, yeah.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
So we're back. We're going to the skip site.
Skip site, which I got really excited about. I don't know. I was like, what does that mean? And then I was like, oh, just means it or it skipped. Okay.
See, I kind of had like a brief moment. I was like, oh, the skip site sounds cool. And then they were talking about the gouge. And I was like, it's a skip site and a gouge.
It skips and a gouge.
There's a lot going on.
It skips and it gouges.
So I don't know if you guys picked on this, but normally I don't look for romance in Ancient Aliens.
Yes.
But we got Frank Kimbler arrives. And the body language between him and Linda Moulton Howe is quite something.
Oh, my God.
I didn't catch that.
It was scorching.
You thought there was some animal magnetism there.
I think there was some intertwined arms at points.
He was draped all over him.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It was hot. Was feeling a little uncomfortable.
It was hot.
Frank,
Linda,
it is,
finally.
Yes. You and I have been chasing these artifacts.
Chasing the metals.
Looking for parts.
Yes.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I caught where they said that Frank Kimbler shows Linda Moulton Howe's mysterious fragments.
This is the magic right here.
And I wrote in parentheses, oh, behave.
Yeah.
And here's my magic. Let's get a comparison here.
Oh, this, look at that.
Look at.
There's a lot of sexual innuendos in this program.
There's a lot of repressed sexuality. Yeah.
When Professor Kimbler laid out his box.
It wasn't feeling so repressed between Linda and Frank, though. It seemed like it was right out there for the world.
I know, she was loving it.
But I bet you've never seen anything like
this.
No.
Well, he had spent decades looking for materials around Roswell, and apparently, according to this, he found like a dozen pieces, which my conclusion is he sucks at this. Because they walk around in the desert. So first of all, the three of them go out to the desert. They bring one metal detector. So one guy like holds the metal detector and the other two like walk slowly along with them while he kind of explains what's going on. Doesn't find anything. Apparently he's been doing it for a while because his arms start hurting.
He's had 2 hours at least.
Well, did you know the sun was setting by the end?
Oh, it was?
They said 2 hours. But it looked like 3 or 4. It looked like they were there like at 2 in the afternoon, and then the sun is about to set, and that's when he passed it over. Okay. So they're in a rush to find something. There's like a half hour left before it's dark.
I was too distracted by the erotic connotations.
Oh, okay. I watched it 3 times, so eventually I picked up on that.
So he gets it to Georgios, who almost instantly gets a hit.
Yeah.
I heard something.
Yeah.
There is something.
Oh, my God.
And then they dig up a piece of wire.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's a fucking piece of wire. And then they hand it to he. Then he's like, okay, Linda, you give it a shot. And she immediately finds another piece of wire, which they get all excited because this one is twisted and mangled.
Yeah.
As a piece of wire stuck in the desert probably would be.
And Giorgio says, how could it have gotten that way?
How could it have gotten that way? Wires never get twisted. It's just so strange.
They're always so straight. On Earth, they're straight.
So for some reason, at this point, we get a brief digression to talk about this guy, Melvin Brown, who says he saw two alien bodies in a truck the night of the recovery. It's a deathbed confession, which actually, you know, is granted more credence under the law. But I don't know in this particular case, like, A, whether that really was what he said as he was dying, and B, whether we should take it too seriously.
I feel like, the you know, it's this idea that, like, on the deathbed, like, oh, I'm finally going to purge my conscience of all these things. But it's also like, this is it doesn't matter anymore. So why not, like, burnish a legend a little bit and be like, oh, yeah, by the way, I also slept with Marilyn Monroe. Like, well, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you might as well say the crazy thing. If it survives, people are going to be like, and forever after he said this thing, because whatever you say on your deathbed, people are going to give more credence to. So you might as well say crazy shit. Say anything. I founded the Mormon church, you know? Whatever it is.
My red flags go up when people talk about deathbed confessions, because there's the whole thing about E. Howard Hunt, who is, you know, people have accused him of shooting Kennedy. And he allegedly on his deathbed made all these confessions. But it turns out that he was a little bit senile and perhaps taking medication. And it was his son, St. John Hunt, who's also a major conspiracist, who reported all these things. And I had to do a lot of digging to find out that the rest of the family says that the dad never said these things, or he didn't say them that way, and that the son distorted them and then sold it to, I don't know, some magazine or whatever like that. So there's definitely kind of the let's make money element off, you know, daddy's ramblings. I'm not familiar with Brown. What I was surprised was that Brown had seemed to replace the other quote-unquote whistleblower that they often use, and that's a mortician called Glenn Dennis. In the Roswell story, usually Glenn Dennis figures, front and center, because he says he saw a bunch of bodies. He had this nurse friend, and all of it's been debunked. There's a great book by Philip Klass called The Real Roswell Crash Saucer Cover-Up. And he basically blames a lot of the conspiracists for just making crap up and then just, you know, passing it on. And it just gets a bigger and bigger ball of crap over time. So, yeah, so I didn't know about Brown, but I'm not surprised, because everybody and their uncle has some story about aliens, you know, that they saw. The problem is, again, if you're an investigator and you find the first sign of extraterrestrial life, are you going to stick it on a flatbed truck and cover it with a tarp?
Yeah.
And now, this is not like at the site. This is in Roswell in the base. You would think that they'd put them at least in body bags or something like that. I think that's what I would do. And I get those things out of the public eye. So, yeah. But, you know, they may as well just rot under a tarp on the hot, Roswell sun.
My favorite part of that was Nick Pope saying it. And it was two beautiful Britishisms in one.
Low flatbed lorries with tarpaulins over them.
Which I thought was great.
Oh, tarpaulins. Yes.
I was waiting for him to say something about how the materials are made of aluminium or something, which includes some of the same ingredients as vitamins.
Yeah, exactly.
But no.
Yeah.
None of that happened. But, you know, two's pretty good.
If Nick Pope sounded like a Texan, would people listen to him as much?
I don't know.
Nobody listens to me, and I'm from Texas, so I'm going to say no.
Yeah, there you go. So now we go back to Albuquerque. We go to a lab. Again, it's just more of this bullshit. It's like there's selenium in the wire. So what is selenium? Well, according to Google, it's got a lot of industrial uses in electronics. So it's strange that they would find selenium, a thing that's used in electronics, in a wire. In the end, it's another one of those, like, we identified an element which seems as though it probably does belong in the actual artifact we found, if it was a human artifact.
Yeah.
Yes.
I looked this up, and selenium actually is a naturally occurring trace mineral found in food sources, soil, water, dandruff shampoos, vitamin supplements, nuts, fish, grains, and liver, and electronic devices. So they had to go to the most complex reason for it being there. But can I say something about the lab?
Yes.
I was wondering, what the heck is this Theta Plate lab, who has a it looks like the door is just overlooking a dark alley or something like that in Albuquerque or in Roswell. I think it's Albuquerque.
It's Albuquerque, yeah.
Yeah. And I looked it up, and this is not like a chemistry lab. And I don't understand why Frank.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Why didn't he go to where he works? In the New Mexico Military Institute, right? You would think that they would have labs there. So instead he takes it to this lab. Now, I looked up their website. Thetaplate Lab is... They say, we specialize in high-tech and industrial metal plating services. So what they make is fake gold horseshoes, jewelry, tea sets, trumpet apertures, etc. So they just cover junk with more metal to make it look shiny. That's what they do. It doesn't mean that they don't know their metals, but I thought I wouldn't be the first place that I would go to get a blue ribbon evaluation of evidence.
Yeah. And I like the New Mexico Military Institute. It's like, you're not fucking coming on our campus with those
that's right.
Ancient alien bullshit.
You take that to Wilshire Boulevard, where they'll let you in anywhere.
Exactly right. That's some LA stuff you got going on. So we get another sample has iron, copper, zirconium, which the only thing I know about zirconium is that it's fake diamonds that you can get really cheap, and molybdenum.
Molybdenum.
There's something about finding zirconium at other UFO crash sites, which, you know, there are no other UFO crash sites. So, you know, it's kind of ridiculous. They do mention a Freedom of Information Act thing, which always sort of points towards government secrecy. So that feels like it's sort of more atmospheric than anything else. Then they talk about explosive cratering, which sounds awesome. But in fact, it was just like a little... looked like a little pin prick kind of in this thing. He's like, that's explosive cratering.
I liked how excited they were about explosive cratering. And it's like, it's a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
So
The crater is on the little bit, right? The little 2x2 inch bit. That doesn't mean the thing exploded or was in an explosion. It just means that something hit it.
Yeah.
You know, something flew into it. And I'm thinking this could just be industrial residue where in some kind of a smelter, the thing got dented. And then it got tossed. I used to work as a student in a styrofoam plant, and a lot of times a batch would just go bad, and they just chuck it outside, and then it have to be broken up and thrown on a truck. So it was just basically just plastic that had melted and that hadn't turned into the beads that create, you know, great environmental stuff. Toby would love to do a protest there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you followed up on that. When you said just threw it outside, I was like, oh, that's what you do with like leftover styrofoam?
My job was to shovel it into a truck, right? So, one thing I noticed here, the excitement on those people's faces, when zirconium, selenium, molybdenum, it's almost like, do you guys remember this Quaker Oats commercial where the little boy comes into the kitchen and the narrator says,
we're gonna make a
hot cereal lover round again.
Out of me!
Out of him?
I got the impression that Giorgio was about to eat some oatmeal because he was just getting so excited about these rare metals.
He was thrilled.
You did it!
We get this Russian scientist named Yuri Karash who literally doesn't say anything of any use, but he does have a very strong Russian accent. So again, it kind of adds a little texture, a little atmosphere.
These microscopic spirals were made of wolfram and molybdenum.
It sounds villainous, Toby. You can go ahead and say it. Listen, I don't like that I think that, but if I hear that...
Sort of the Boris Badenov.
Yeah, it's very Rocky IV, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
It's, we must break you.
Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
And then we get to the dramatic conclusion, which, as so many dramatic conclusions are, is a Zoom call.
Kind of like this one.
Yeah, exactly.
Toby's about to pull out some rare metals.
Exactly. Well, it's indium. There are traces of indium in the sample.
I never heard of it until, I don't think I was listening in grade 10 chemistry.
It's another thing that's used in electronic stuff. At this point, we're 3 for 3 with them finding weird elements that I'd never heard of that are actually commonly used in electronics.
It's as abundant as silver, told me the AI.
Oh.
Yeah. God, it occurs naturally as a byproduct of zinc, lead, copper, and tin, widely distributed in the Earth's crust, but it's also a byproduct. So that's why I thought what they're picking at is some kind of industrial waste and somebody just threw it or it fell off a truck or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, they have this great talk. And then for some reason, Suklos says that people come to him and they say, hey, man, like all these spaceships, they come from other stars, but then they get to the Earth and they just crash.
Yeah.
Like, what's the story? And he's like, well, technology fails, you know, it's like, it's just what happens. But according to this, it fails again and again and again and again when they get to Earth. Although, to be fair, we don't know how many also failed on the way to Earth and just never got here. Right. Like it is kind of that, like that subway fallacy where it's like there are more cars going in the other direction than in the direction you want to go. Because you don't see the ones that you don't see. But that's where it kind of ends.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Can I make a comment about the Ural Mountains?
Yes.
The junk they found there, I don't know if nanoparticles is... Because it sounds like it's small, but there's still visible bits of metal made from tungsten and molybdenum. Now, I looked this up, you know. The images looked very familiar to me. And then I actually Googled and I found there was a skeptics website that talked about this. And they said that's exactly how guitar strings are made. So what they're showing us might just be an enhanced guitar that where you have the wire wound up around the end. So, but there's also, I heard there was also a test range near there. So it could just be space junk from, you know, Russian rockets that just crash landed and they found some of it. Because apparently it's very hard to date metal. And so what they did is they dated the rocks around it. And then they just concluded that, oh, the metal is 50,000 years old, but it could just crash into the ground and it's mixed with old rocks. So there you go.
So,
by the way, they got the information about this from the Epoch Times. Now, I don't want to pee on the Epoch Times. I have been published by the Epoch Times, not by my own choice, but it happened. I'm not necessarily proud of it, but it happened. And it's based on a ufologist book by a man called Johannes Feebag, which sounds like Fleabag.
Yes.
And I think he was a kind of an eccentric scientist with a little pet theory that no one else believed. So
I'm going to circle back and just to summarize what you just told me is that aliens brought guitars to Earth 50,000 years ago.
Aliens invented rock and roll.
Well, if they're crashing everywhere, I figure it's alien teenagers.
It could be.
And they come here on joyrides with their girlfriends and they happen to crash because they're trying to play music and drive the spaceship at the same time.
Yeah.
There was a podcast about one of those biospheres where these people had to go and spend like a year in the biosphere and stuff. And towards the end, when shit starts breaking down, this one guy had brought a guitar and apparently was like endlessly plinking on his guitar. And people just, by the end of the year, just people wanted to kill him. And I was like, all right, that would be my number one rule for my biodome is going to be no fucking guitars.
Yeah.
Anyway, so any last thoughts on this not very ancient aliens episode?
I'll just say quickly that it's interesting to think about, you know, the 80s kept coming up in like this era where there was a credulity around certain things that were on TV. And so Linda Moulton Howe represents this incredible period of time that was sort of the Latter-day Saints of journalism when, you know, they had money for these like TV documentaries. So she comes in and she makes her career doing like all these different productions that were all about the environment. Like one was, let's see here, one was about smog pollution. One was about hydrogen as an alternative energy source to fossil fuels. This was in the 70s. She was doing this stuff. You know, she was nominated for Emmys and so on and so forth. And then so the cattle mutilations happen. And so in the late 70s, she does this documentary about that. And after that, everything just pivots for her. There's no investigative journalism at all. It's just all this credulity and like all of this stuff to reinforce the bias that I think is, you know, is really telling. And also just, again, that period of time when there was money in journalism and people could do documentaries about really interesting stuff. And those days are over. But luckily, there's plenty of money for crazy shit about aliens doing all kinds of nonsense, playing guitar. That's my closing thought.
I think over time they have to one-up themselves and eventually they kind of lose an entire sense of, you know, what's real.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, it's like, Bud Hopkins was like that, right, Toby? The next book has to be more sensational than the last one. And so it just got crazier and crazier until the point that he's believing Linda Napolitano and people are clearly hucksters.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a choice. He needs something bigger than the last one.
Right.
And maybe she's like that. I mean, to me, she just seemed a little bit nutty. I mean, I think it was telling that the very last thing in the show is she makes a reference to the 2011 Jerusalem UFO.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, that had already been debunked. In fact, it didn't take me long to find Bette Radford, Robert Schaefer, and more recently, Sneezing Monkey, right? All this stuff is on, it's online, it's available. They just need to do a little bit of research to find out, oh, it was a guy who was basically just filming a picture on a TV screen, and then they did like four different versions of it and threw a little light with a computer program after. It didn't take that much work to figure it out, but they're convinced that, oh, it's proof.
I wish I remembered the details a little bit better, but I think Doty arranged for Linda to be shown like some quote unquote secret documents that had to do with like proof that aliens were somehow involved in the creation of humans, like in prehistory, like they found some evidence for it. And she was super excited. And it just seems like it's like one of those useful idiot type things where you can kind of filter things through her to get it out to, you know, not necessarily the public, but to the UFO world, at least at this point. I don't know. It makes me feel kind of sad, actually, to think about it that way. I mean, I think you see like these kind of hucksters and grifters who are clearly like whatever, you know, they're just... Yeah,
there's a nihilist, cynical thing.
Linda Moldenhaus seems to, not that she's not in on the grift, but I think she does have some sincerity to her sort of bizarre beliefs. But I, you know, that's just an impression I get from watching her. But again, she was in the first blooms of love in this episode. So it's a little bit hard to...
I missed a lot of that. I don't know why I didn't
have... Yeah, you got to go back and rewatch this stuff.
Check it out, Michelle. It is hot.
Maybe I was more focused on the Giorgio-Linda relationship, which was like a Thelma and Louise thing. You know, it's almost like they're going into the desert. At some point, something's going to fall on them and they'll die.
Yeah. Well,
and they'll be martyrs for the cause.
If that's the a comparison, then Frank is the Brad Pitt of this road trip movie. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on. I'm glad we did this.
It's like, been great.
You definitely had the scoop on a lot of this stuff.
Michelle, where can people find you?
My website is paranoidplanet.ca, not com. I don't know what's on paranoidplanet.com. I just hope it's not porn, but paranoidplanet.ca. And that's where you'll find episodes of our show. You will find some of my blog posts. I mean, a lot of it is the articles that there are audio essays, but then I illustrate them. I don't know if you want to link the one I did on Roswell. There's one on there. Yeah, and also my book is called Thinking Critically About the Kennedy Assassination, Routledge Press 2022. If you buy one, you help me pay for my golf games. Thank you. Please.
That's why we do this.
That is very important.
And I need it. It's therapy. It's therapy.
Great. Michelle Gagné, thank you very much. This has been More Like Ancient Aliens. I'm Brandon R. Reynolds.
I'm Toby Ball.
And we'll see you next time. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, send us nice notes. We would love to hear from you. Bother Toby, send him some nice notes. He's got things going on. You never know.
Next time on a very special More Like Ancient Aliens. People say talk is cheap. In this case, it's $19.99. That's the price to rent UFO documentarian James Fox's new film, The Age of Disclosure. A rare opportunity to watch guys in suits talk about stuff they've seen or heard about or think might possibly be true. Also, the nefarious Legacy Project, featuring a bunch of shots of people pretending to be doing official business in the U.S. Capitol. See you next time.
More Like Ancient Aliens is produced by Heather Eagle-Ears-Wilson. It's a production of Grab Bag Collab, and our music is by Nathan Reedy.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.